Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Still getting a lot of feedback from people who are trying to wager on sporting events using Oregon Lottery's new system that they put out this week. Heard from somebody earlier in the show who said they loaded the app yesterday, deposited money to it, got confirmation of the deposit, which was charged to their credit card, but they had a zero balance. A lot of people not getting emails back when they email support. Gentleman reported 20 minutes later that the balance did show up. I had another person who's having trouble getting money out of the system. Peter, do you understand how this is supposed to work? Like, you put money in, you're supposed to be able to get money out.
Yeah, I mean, I would sure hope so.
Person is being told by a lottery employee that instead of withdrawing the money electronically, they're going to send you a debit card with the money on it.
What?
I'll see if I can confirm that, but that's what this gentleman is telling me. That's lame.
I'm out if that's the case, honestly.
You really got to get a debit card?
Yeah, no thanks.
Ken Go of the Oregonian and Oregon Live. Better than a debit card. He joins us now. Ken Go, where are you right now?
I'm in the Oregonian lobby, or the lobby of the building that the Oregonian is in.
Set the scene for people who will never be in the lobby of the Oregonian. What do you see as you look around?
I see him look directly across from an empty office, security desk without a security guard, and nothing else.
There you go. Go Oregon-Washington games in your history. What do you remember from this rivalry?
You know, I think the couple favorite games. One, Oregon won 1995. It was the year after the Wheaton pick. In Husky Stadium, Oregon went out to a big lead. Washington came back, and it looked like the Huskies were going to win. They were lining up for a field goal right at the end of the game, open into the stadium. Guy kicked the field goal. I swear it was straight. And a gust of wind picked it up at halfway and blew it off course. The Ducks won 24-22. And I guess maybe that day God was a Duck fan. Then there's one, maybe 2001, 2002 in Eugene, where Neuheisel's team came down and thumped the Ducks. And then Neuheisel, I think just to stick it to Oregon fans, had his players come back out. They'd already taken their pads off to celebrate on the field at Autzen, Rich Brooks Field. And that one went down hard with Oregon fans, and I think just added another log to the bonfire of the rivalry.
Why do you think this is a rivalry?
Well, you know, neighboring states, schools that are similar in their orientation, you know, research universities, strong in the humanities. But I also think for a while it was a bigger rivalry for the Ducks than for the Huskies. Hmm. And I think there was a little bit of an inferiority complex the Ducks had, and the Huskies played into that by just sort of treating the Ducks with contempt. But I think that all changed, you know, in the last two decades, where Oregon's had the upper hand of the rivalry, commandingly so.
Yeah, because I look at it and I ask, you know, I say, well, why doesn't Oregon State have a rivalry with Washington or Washington State, given the way that the Oregon thing? And I think there must be something else to it. Was it personality driven? Was it that, you know, did the Kenny Wheaton thing help fuel it? You know, what else?
I think the Wheaton thing certainly fueled it from Washington's perspective. You know, Seattle's the big metropolitan area. They're, in a lot of ways, the university is a lot of things University of Oregon wanted to be for years and wasn't. So I think that's changed in recent years. I think, you know, Oregon's caught up. But for a long time, you know, Oregon was much smaller in terms of stadium size and school size and reach athletically and academically. You know, I think that's changed in recent years. But if you want the sort of the fuel of the, you know, what started it, what made it such an intense rivalry from Oregon's perspective, I think that was part of it.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian, you can read him on Oregon Live, certainly follow him on Twitter. Ken, you'll be at this game. What are you hoping to learn about Oregon in this game?
I think it's time we find out really where Oregon stands. The Ducks have been demonstrably better than everybody they've played except Auburn. If they're demonstrably better than Washington, I think we're looking at a pretty good team. The flip side is if they really struggle with the Huskies or they lose, then I think we're going to say, well, you know, this team's still a couple courts short.
I look at sort of the matchups on the field, and certainly what jumps to mind is Justin Herbert in Oregon's passing game against Washington's defensive backs and Jimmy Lake against Marcus Arroyo. Do you feel like Oregon has held something back to this point because they haven't played challenging games, or have we had a good look at what Oregon is on the offensive side?
I think what you see is what you get. I think that's the way Mario Cristobal wants to play. He wants to have a really good defense. He wants to wear teams down with a strong power running game and take over in the fourth quarter. I think that's the way he wants to play. And I think that's what they're doing. And I don't think it's going to change against Washington.
How does Washington win this game if you're building an argument for the Huskies?
Well, they're going to have to be able to prove they can move the ball on the Oregon defense. And nobody's done that so far. You can say, well, that's because the Ducks haven't played anybody very good, and you might have a point, but it might also be that the Ducks just have a really good defense. To me, that how they play is sort of the key thing about how this game's going to go. If Oregon's defense plays the way it has and shuts the Huskies down, I think the Ducks win handily. However, if Washington shows it can run the ball on Oregon and open up the Washington play-action passing game, then I think you've got a ball game.
Better for this rivalry, the health of the rivalry, if Washington wins this game or Oregon?
I think the rivalry is going to be intense no matter who wins. I think we're going to be hearing about this game for the rest of the year from the team that won it. You know, this rivalry is not going away. It's going to be intense from now until you and I are in an old folks' home.
I ain't going to no home.
For me, then for you.
I ain't going to no home.
For me, then for you.
I'll come visit you. Hey, that's the only way I'm there. Hey, if you have, if we go back to last year, if Washington makes that field goal at the end of regulation, Washington wins the game. It's now 3 in a row for Washington, and this game is about can Oregon get over Washington. But
yeah.
I think that ball goes down the middle, and we're talking about a different narrative.
Yeah, I agree. And coming in, sort of, was Chris Peterson has brought the Huskies back, and they're the big dogs again, so to speak, in the North. And if they win that game, that narrative still stands. But now, no. The Ducks are right there with them. And it, as of this game, they're favored to win, and they're higher ranked. So that the whole Chris Peterson narrative's on the back burner unless Washington wins.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian is our guest. I like Oregon to win this game. I think Oregon's the better team. But I build some of that by looking at Stanford and Cal and the way Oregon handled them and the way Washington struggled. Is that fool's gold or is that logic?
No, I mean, you can certainly build a case that way, but don't underestimate Husky Stadium. That is a tough place to play. If the weather becomes a factor, Washington is, and Peterson has built this team for that environment. And then it's loud. Back in the 90s when Washington was cranked up, they played Army there, and one of the Army players compared it to the sound of a transport plane on the runway. I mean, it gets that loud. And those people will be psyched for this game. This, you know, you had Softy on yesterday, and he told you sort of what the Husky fans think about Oregon. I mean, they're going to be jacked up. It's going to be wild.
Softy said this, and I want you to hear this because I know you heard it yesterday, but I'll play it for listeners who didn't have it.
As far as the game on Saturday, am I scared? Am I fearful? First of all, I'm nervous for every freaking Husky game. That's number one. And number two, no, I'm not scared of Oregon. I mean, who the hell has Oregon beaten this year? They haven't beaten anybody.
They did beat two teams that beat Washington, though.
Yeah, you know, and Softy, but Softy speaks for what everything, for every quality that Oregon fans hate about Washington. That sort of news contempt about here's this nice little team that thinks it's pretty good, and are going to come up here and play with the big boys now. And I think that attitude just sort of rubs salt in any wound Oregon might have. And these teams are going to be psyched. This is going to be a really good game.
Here's what worries me if I'm Oregon. Marcus Arroyo against Jimmy Lake is a huge question mark for Oregon. And if it is that kind of game, or if it's like a 24-21 game or 20-17, I don't know if Oregon has the kicker to win that kind of game.
That's a fair question. And again, don't underestimate the conditions. If the wind's blowing off the lake, the kicking game gets really problematic. I sound like I'm repeating myself, but if it's wet, windy, cold day, those are the kind of conditions that the Washington Huskies are built for. Now, I think this Oregon team is built that way, too. It's going to be a strength versus strength head-on collision.
I wonder if Oregon will run the ball, and then there's the Justin Herbert factor. He hasn't yet had that game where maybe it was Stanford last year where he really wowed me in that game, but he hasn't since then had a game where he just took over, and I go, Justin Herbert just won that game. I'm waiting for that moment. Is that asking too much of him, or is he going to have to do that at some point?
No, I think he does. You know, if he wants to be an NFL player, he's got to show that he can take a game by the horns, both with his talent and also with his leadership. I mean, he's got to be a guy that's got to be the guy that the other players rally around, the team rallies around. And for all his skill, I think that's a legitimate question about Herbert. Does he have that personality? Is he a take charge guy? Can he be, an Aaron Rodgers sort of player that's going to rally the team around in a tough situation? And we have not seen that. Now, whether that's because that's not part of his personality or because Oregon has not asked him to do that, I think is a question. And I think that'll be something we need to watch Saturday.
All right, your pick for the game, Ken Go. How do you see this one going down?
Ducks close. I think Oregon's defense is the decisive unit on the field.
I like Oregon to win. I think Oregon and Utah.
I think it's going to be close, though.
What do you think happened to Stanford? What do you think? You see that Stanford-UCLA game?
I saw a lot of it. They're playing their third-string quarterback. They're banged up on the line of scrimmage. They just had the wrong injuries at the wrong time. I don't think anything's wrong with the program. It's one of those years where everything that could go wrong has gone wrong.
Ken Go of the Oregonian, I will see you at the stadium. I appreciate you, man.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Sitting beside you and chatting it up. All right. There's Ken Go. Read him on Oregon Live. Follow him on Twitter. Punch It Audio's coming up. We have a spat involving Twitter. No. That's coming up at 1:30 as well. Also, John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News will be along. You have the bald-faced truth. Leave it here. If you miss a guest on this show or you miss this show, you can get it via podcast. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, wherever you get a podcast, you can get the Bald Face Truth radio show. Just search for John Canzano or Bald Face Truth. And once there, subscribe. Also, give us a rating. Give us some feedback. Tell us how we're doing. Alabama Adriana literally does a cartwheel when you give feedback. She likes the feedback. She's millennial. Brian is in Milwaukee. He wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, John, I know Ken, I know his son Justin, and I wanted to call in and tell you that the quality of the man is off the charts. And, I mean, I could tell you one story really quickly. I was a coach, not the coach, but a coach when Justin got hurt, and we all spent those days at the hospital, and obviously, Justin's mom was very upset, and she told me, because we knew them, and she told me that...
Hold on a second. I want to let the listeners in, because you're talking about Ken Go of the Oregonian. His son, Justin, while playing in a high school football game several years ago, suffered a head injury, brain injury, and went to the hospital, and that's what you're talking about, Brian, in Milwaukee, for people who don't know. Go ahead.
Yes, and so I walked into the emergency family room And I never realized at that point it was that serious.
Yeah.
And Mom, who I love and is a wonderful person, ripped me. And Ken Goh stood up, and he loved me. And I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
It was a hard time.
Yeah. Look, that's a tough time when you have a kid who's involved in an injury. And by the way, Justin listens to the show. And I catch Justin every once in a while. He might be the biggest listener of this show. Every once in a while, because I do Facebook Live off the beginning of the show, Justin will give me a shout-out on Facebook while I'm starting the show, and I love that. Love hearing from him. He's doing well now, for people who are wondering. But, yeah, I've known Ken Goh for 17 years. You get to know somebody in the press box and as a colleague, and his wife, Christy, as well, phenomenal lady. And, of course... their kids are great. I know their kids as well. Even his daughter, who's been a babysitter for the now 16-year-old. She used to babysit her. Crazy. All right, let's play Punch It Audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters. Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio, presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, the Yankees and Astros played a game last night, American League Championship Series. Finally, after a weather delay, they got to Game 4. Punch it.
And he hits a high fly to right. Toward the line, Springer, he's there to make the catch. Ball game over. Houston wins. In the ninth inning for the Yanks, no runs, no hits, one left. Houston wins the ball game by the score of 8-3, and they take a 3-1 series lead in the best of seven.
Yankees facing elimination in the best of seven series today. First pitch, 4:08 for game five. Yankees need to get it going offensively. No surprise that teams that are pitching it are advancing and winning games in the postseason. That's how it works. Cool moment last night as CeCe Sabathia left the game. A lot of standing ovation, both dugouts. Cool moment. A lot of people wondering if that's the last time he'll make an appearance. Moving to the NFL. Joe Flacco, speaking for all of the Denver Broncos, said, "We're just not getting it done. Punch it."
I mean, they came after us, and we kind of let them come after us. And, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to them. They played a really physical. They came hard, and they played downhill. And, you know, we were in a lot of bad situations.
Final, Kansas City 30, Denver 6. By the way, Vic Fangio, after the game, says, "Man, this team sucks. We need..." No, he didn't. He said, "I still believe in my guys. Punch it."
"We had a poor performance tonight. You know, really in all three levels. We had a poor first drive defensively. Had a long stretch where we played decent after that. You know, kicking game let us down. We miss a kick. Don't get a fake punt off. And obviously our problems on offense. But I still believe in these guys, the players we have, who they are and what they're about. And I think we'll take this extra time to refocus and get going here, which on the second half of the season."
I still think Denver needs a quarterback that's not Joe Flacco. Moving to Dallas, where they do have a quarterback who's not Joe Flacco. Dak Prescott is the quarterback in Dallas. He talked about his head coach, Jason Garrett. Here's the quarterback talking coach. Punch it.
"Same guy. He's been the same guy."
Hold on. We got to go louder. I want to bump that.
"The same guy. He's been the same guy through and through, and he always will be. Credit him to that. But that's what you expect. Guy's a professional and always that way. Knows how to lead a team. And I've said it before. We all got his back in this locker room."
Dak Prescott standing by his head coach. That echoed the sentiment that we heard from Jerry Jones 24 hours ago, as the Cowboys owner said, "You know, come on. There's been no thought of trying to fire."
"I can genuinely say that that is not a thought that I'm having, so it would be unfair to our fans for me to have any indication about what I may think the future is as far as a head coach."
Jason Garrett's done. That's what we know. He just got the vote of confidence from the owner. Here's the bottom line. They lost to the Jets last week. That's bad. Everybody's wondering if he still has a job. They also lost to the Packers 2 weeks ago. They lost to the Saints 3 weeks ago. They haven't won since consecutive wins over the Redskins and the Dolphins. It's not a good football team. Now they're going to Philadelphia. They're hosting Philadelphia. It's on Sunday night where everyone could see it. If they can get through this game, they've got the Giants after that, that you can right the ship there. Then it's Minnesota. Then it's Detroit. Then it's the Patriots. Then it's the Bills. It's going to get ugly for Jason Garrett. If they don't beat the Eagles, if they don't enjoy the next 2 weeks, they're not going to enjoy the rest of the season. I'll say that. It's going to be tough for the Cowboys. Again, they have to get back to running the football. They have to get back to their strength, Ezekiel Elliott. Matthew Stafford in Detroit, all the officiating stuff behind them, talking now about the Vikings. They've got an upcoming game with Minnesota. Punch it.
We understand the challenges that come with playing Minnesota. They're playing with a bunch of confidence. They've played really well the last couple weeks, scoring a bunch of points on offense and doing a great job on defense of, doing what they always do, which is, attack and make it tough on offenses.
Detroit is the best 2-2-1 team I've ever seen. Detroit is like two possessions from being 4-0-1, maybe three possessions from being 5-0. Still, the Detroit Lions, they get to host Minnesota in a pivotal game in that division. San Francisco 49ers not getting a lot of love nationally. People may be waiting for them to come down to earth. But Case Keenum in Washington talking about the Niners. Punch it.
I mean, they've got some guys in the back end that can, that can cover and have been doing it a long time. Played against a lot of them at different places, and they're very sound. They've obviously ranked in the one of the tops in the league in pass defense, so we're going to have our work cut out for us in the passing game.
Yeah, but see, he's missing the point. The Niners haven't been great because of the guys in the back there, Richard Sherman and the 49ers. They've been great because their guys up front have been disruptive. Bosa, Armstead, Buckner. You remember those names. 49ers are 5-0 playing at Washington, who's 1-5. This is a, if you want respect, this is a game you got to win if you're the Niners. You can't take this ugly step backwards that everybody else is taking. Russell Wilson in Seattle talking about the Baltimore Ravens. Here's your MVP candidate. Punch it.
Super aggressive defense. They got great players. Coached extremely well. So it's going to be a tough challenge. We've got to be ready to roll. Got to play, bring our A game. They're fighting for something special. We are too. And so it'll be a great matchup. We're looking forward to it. Like I said, we have a lot of respect for how these guys play. When you turn on the film, you notice, man, these guys are good. We're going to have to bring our best game.
It's going to be a good one. I like this game. There are very few games in the NFL regular season where you sit up in your chair. This is one of them right now. I'm looking at the Ravens. That's a good team. They got to go on the road to Seattle, play in a hostile environment. Lamar Jackson going on in this thing. But, are the Seahawks are they a contender, or are they just a team that's won some close games that has a really nice quarterback? That question may get answered this week. Jared Goff and the Rams have been in a tailspin. They've lost three straight. Punch it.
No, I think it's all about our process. I think you have to take it, win or lose, you're coming in the next week with the same process. And, of course, there's a different feeling in your stomach and a different feeling, coming in on Monday after a loss rather than a win. But it's the same thing. You approach it the same way. You look at the film. You learn from it. You get better. You hopefully get the stuff fixed. And, we're working through some things right now. And, look forward to getting them fixed this weekend.
By the way, remember a year ago, Jalen Ramsey scorched the earth quarterbacks across the NFL? Basically said that Josh Allen was trash and Joe Flacco sucks. Matt Ryan's overrated. Jared Goff, he said, quote, he's average to above average. Reminds me of Jimmy Garoppolo. Year one, he wasn't good. He wasn't even good enough to earn his own starting role. Like, if you had the number one pick, you'd expect him to start. He wasn't ready to do that. He wasn't able to do that. And when he got in, he didn't do that good. By the way, you're a teammate now. How do you handle that, Peter Sampson?
You tell him, man, I'm just trying to get fired up. I'm trying to get my guys fired up. I say whatever.
I remember that happened on this show because I had Chop working behind the scenes. And I found an audio cut of Chop, or somebody sent it to me, of when he worked on another show ripping on me.
Oh, yeah.
And so I replayed it on the air. Watched him squirm.
Just business, baby.
Oh, yeah. You were saying? All right. Coming up, Matt Priem, 24/7 Sports. There's some beef going on Twitter with an account on Twitter that is... created fake quotes. What are we? Have you heard of this? You heard of what's going on?
They're creating fake quotes?
Yeah, making stuff up.
I'm guessing those quotes are, let's say, inflammatory?
Yes, people making stuff up on social media. What?
I'm shocked and appalled. I can't believe it.
Matt Priem, 24/7 Sports, is in the middle of...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but... if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.